Now, hold on a minute there, please, if you will.
Oh, that's too much.
Too much, George. Enough. No. Just try a partial echo chamber. Not bad. Just to control it a little bit there. Just to, like an echo. I want you to assume, George, that I am in a vast primal wilderness, right? And it is the echoing sound of unfriendly animals. Bad. Let's turn it again. Too much. That sounds too electronic. That's the sound, just like it is echoing throughout the granite halls of a castle in Transylvania. And Dracula has just made another score, right? Okay. That's not bad. Not bad. Of course, electronics have certain drawbacks that cannot. It just simply doesn't come up to the original castle wall. No way. I'm just practicing here. I met a guy the other day who. The reason I'm practicing, see, I recognize that there are certain talents that are hardly recognized in major talent recognition circles. We always recognize people for conventional talents like dancing. Like singing, writing. These are conventional talents, do you agree? But some of the great talents that I've met in my time are people who did none of those things. They did not dance, they did not sing, they did not play the piano. They did very special things. For example, all of us in our time, especially if you're a male, have met great spitters. I mean, the guy that could spit, I mean, man, he could... You can just lay it out. You ever met a great spitter? Fantastic accuracy and distance. In fact, I'll ask you a bit of trivia here, if you don't mind a little trivia there. Of course, most people's lives are made up of trivia. Hi, George. Shepard, will you stop getting personal? However, that's too close to the truth. But the scene that I'm referring to, a scene in a movie. What movie had a scene in which... two guys, and they were surrounded by others who were watching them, had a spitting contest for accuracy. Yeah, one guy said. In fact, they were squatting in a very. If I tell you the area they were sitting in, they would give you a clue. They were sitting in a shell hole. You've seen pictures and movies of shell holes. It was in a shell hole. See? And these guys are squatting in a shell hole in the middle of a fantastic bombardment that was going on. An artillery barrage was echoing over them. And a fantastic bombardment was going on. And one guy was in the middle of all this. See, and I'll give you a clue. I saw this movie at the Museum of Modern Art. So you can estimate that what kind of a movie. It was a very official type movie. And it was the kind of scene you would never see in a contemporary movie, because contemporary movies tend to stay away from the real thing people really do. They do. But the earlier movies tend to concentrate on the things that people really do. And so these guys were sitting in the middle of this bombardment. Pow, pow, the shells were going off. And one guy... he just went like that, boom. He zapped. He shot a wad, see, like that. At which point, somebody else made a comment, and the next thing you know, there was a demonstration of a fantastic expectoration accuracy, expectoring. one of them took a knife and made a target. On the side of the shell hole, you know, he just dug it out in the dirt, and he went, pow, zap, right in the middle of it. And it was a great excitement. And the entire scene was based on that particular moment. And this was considered a great scene in this movie. Now, what was the movie? Okay. Now, I'm not even a movie buff. Why does this... and if you're curious why I happen to see it in the Museum of Modern Art, was that one of the things that people who are out of work in New York do if they're in a certain, you might say, artistic area of life, you know, actors and writers and so on, when they're out of work, when they got nothing to do, many of them in the afternoon hang around the Museum of Modern Art. If you want to see 500 out-of-work actors, anytime you care to see it, go to the Museum of Modern Art any afternoon, and you'll find them wandering around, usually trying to pick up people, persons of the opposite sex. And it's often very, very effective over there. And I used to spend a great deal of time there, and so I know whereof I speak. And you go through the cafeteria line there, and a lot of things can happen there. And I happened to have this free ticket one afternoon. I went to see this movie. I had no interest at all in the movie. It was a great place to go because a lot of other people were there that looked kind of interesting to me. And I sat there, and this great big scene occurred. What was the movie? Who was the hero of it? See, I think when you know, speaking of trivia, did you see the newest stamps? The new series of stamps. Did you know that they have a Tom Sawyer stamp now? That means a whole new area of stamps have opened up now, the aesthetic stamp. There was a time when only presidents, usually dead presidents, were on the stamps. In fact, I think there's a congressional rule about that you cannot be on a stamp unless you are no longer with us. Did you know that? Yeah, that's right. There are probably a lot of regulations. I'll be deluged with stamp collectors' writings on this, but nevertheless, there's a story. You know, here's Tom Sawyer, and what is he doing? He's painting the fence. You know, the classic scene out of Tom Sawyer, if you ever read the book. Well, this opens up fantastic. Can you imagine? Why only people like Tom Sawyer? Why not say, for example, Moby Dick? Is seen snorting and blowing water, and the spread-eagled on Moby Dick trailing busted harpoons is Captain Ahab. That would be kind of a groovy stamp. another one that you... Oh, I can think of a lot of them. I can think of what's to prevent, say, Holden Caulfield wearing his red baseball cap, looking bugged. I can see the day when a stamp has on it Schwartz or Ludlow Kissel. Great moments in God We Trust. Ludlow Kissel is being blown up by his famous 4th of July real blockbuster aerial bomb. And there it is in the 8 colors. It's a 7-cent domestic stamp. I can just imagine what Mark Twain would say if he saw a Tom Sawyer stamp. You know, he grew to hate that book. You realize that, don't you? In fact, he would not even discuss Tom Sawyer in his later years. He refused to even talk about it. And these are all problems that a writer has to face. One day he's liable to find his characters on a stamp looking nothing like he envisioned his characters, and certainly nothing like the situation in which they were found in the book, but very romanticized. And so... I could see, even a better step would be Ishmael. Ishmael, you know, out of Moby Dick, Ishmael. I in the book, and he opens up the book and he says, "Call me Ishmael." And I could see Ishmael floating in this wreckage. And there it is. You see all these waves, and the wreckage is all around him. The Pequod has just been destroyed by this great white whale. And here is Ishmael floating, and his eyeballs are bugging out, you know, and his tongue is hanging out. And underneath it, it says, "Moments after the Pequod sank, Ishmael, floating in the wreckage." A great stamp, a dramatic stamp. And these stamps, it opens up a whole new area now. Speaking of an area of trivia, if I may get into this, I'm not a trivia fan, but I suppose bear a certain responsibility for this whole thing, because a few years back, before the phrase was even popularized, I was referring to trivia as the things by which our lives are led. The average klutz can tell you more about, let's say, the life history of, or let's say, for example, just take an example of Charlie Schulz's character's Peanuts, than he can his own family. So naturally, trivia is the way it is. The average person can tell you more about the attitudes of Walter Cronkite than he can his own nephew. So trivia is what really controls our lives. It isn't just part of our lives. It controls it. You know, it is trivia. So the other day, I'm in this rotten old bookstore down on 4th Avenue, which is where all the old rotten old bookstores are downtown, down around 14th Street. Yeah, there's a lot of... Yeah, you know where that is. And, there's a lot of great stuff down there. See, and they sell... It's the only place where they're honest about books. They sell them by the pound. That's the place where a giant, big, fat, overblown, doorstop-type book by, say, Jacqueline Suzanne is, in effect, worth more than, say, The Red Badge of Courage, which is a very thin novel, but admittedly a classic. But it doesn't weigh as much. So in a place where you buy your books by the pound, the fatter the book, the more valuable the book. And so you'll find a lot of these real terrible-looking, real awful books that are unreadable, but they're more expensive because they weigh more than the tiny classics, which often are thin. So I'm down there knee-deep in all these old books. I'm just walking around seeing, and they had bushel baskets full of old magazines, thousands of old magazines just piled up there. You could buy them by like 7 cents a pound. Now, I don't know how this guy arrived at these prices. You see, it's not like, you know, that there's a federal subsidy for the, you know, for plowing under certain numbers of books. Wouldn't it be great if the publishing world finally, because it's always so in trouble financially, got a deal like the farmers? And they received, say, $400,000 for every book not published. So, they, not a bad idea, come to think of it, because there's a lot of books that I wonder. But, you know, nevertheless, I could just see this publisher, he's got endless acres. You see, this thing, you got to realize, the farmer has large numbers of acres that are never put into production. He is paid not to produce. So I can just see, that's called subsidies. See? And I can just see the publisher, funny, he's up against the wall because there's 40 trillion books published a year. And finally, the publishing lobby finally gets through to Congress and says, it's either that or the publishing business goes out of business. We got to have federal subsidies. And so Senator Claghorn or Senator Bullard gets up and he delivers a ringing address on the floor of Congress. Give me a little echo chamber that sounds like the Hall of Congress. Fellow legislators, Speaker of the House, President of the Pro Tem Senate Committee on Investigating Subsidies, through the publishing industry, I take this time now to address myself for the congressional record and for my constituents. There is a great and important industry in these United States which is slowly beginning to go under due to the influx of the technological revolution of which we are all victims. Today I speak to you on behalf of the small, the important, the culturally significant publisher who today is suffering from the technological revolution. America is producing a generation of illiterates. Thousands of children cannot read and are proud of the fact. Millions of Americans are proud that their son knows the star of every movie produced within the past 15 years and has won prizes on television with that knowledge. And I say to you that in centuries to come, America will be judged on the quality of its literary writers, publishers, and creators who will remain long after Johnny Carson is forgotten. And are we doing anything about it? I say to you, no. This is a national disaster. Thousands of publishers are going under every year. And I say, if we can give vast subsidies to raisers of pigs, hogs,
pork chops. We can give a modicum of subsidy aid to those publishers who today stand on the threshold of extinction. I recommend a bill wherein a publisher is awarded a certain federal grant for the number of books he does not publish in a year. Because many publishers are forced to publish second-rate diet books. Memoirs of people named Phyllis Diller merely to subsist. And what happens to the Stephen Cranes? What happens to the Thomas Wolfes, the Herman Melvilles of our time? They have to wind up selling used cars in Cleveland to subsist on what they can wrest from a society that cares not for right orders. How long has it been since you have seen a serious novelist on the Mike Douglas show? Well, I say never. But you will see endless David Rubens who tell you the 47,000 variations of sexual positions one can attain if one studies this bit of claptrap. And so I say today is to save the publisher from extinction. Federal subsidies are necessary. They do not wish to publish this sort of intellectual cabbage, but they are forced to. And so I say, let us give them federal subsidies, awarding them for the number of books they do not publish. And so I wish this to be written into the congressional record. And I thank you for your forbearance. And now I yield the floor to the distinguished senator and my colleague from the state of Illinois who wishes to address you on some other insignificant topic.
Yeah, it's not bad. Hey, speaking of this this business of trivia and going down, down to the store. The reason I brought this up right from the start is you know, when you ever, people tend to think in terms of blocks. When you hear about pulp magazines, for example, everybody talks about pulp westerns, and they talk about pulp detective stories. But the reason that I'm bringing this up, I discovered amid a whole pile of old magazines. And I bought it, incidentally, if you're curious, for 6 cents. I bought a pulp magazine. Did you ever see a real pulp magazine? Here it is. This is a real pulp magazine. And there it is. You can see it's even pulp. It really is. The paper is yellow, and it's cruddy-looking paper. That's why they called it pulp. And apparently, at one time in American history, one of the great-selling pulp magazines areas, say classification of pulp magazines, was the railroad magazine. I didn't know anybody ever read railroad magazine, but apparently that was a big deal. It was a pulp magazine based nothing about railroads. Now, I know immediately I'm going to be deluged with a lot of guys who are going to say, "Why don't you come and visit our railroad museum?" And all that. I have no interest in railroads. So please don't assume that Shepherd is a railroad buff. I am not. Anybody who has lived within a half mile of a major freight switchyard has no love for railroads. And I grew up, the house that I lived in throughout most of my early teen years and so on, was about a half mile from a switching yard. And I want to tell you, the people who lived for miles around that area hated the railroads. Because for one thing, all night long, you hear, boom, boom. They're banging these cars back and forth, you know, when they're switching. Then you'd hear, ding, 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 ding. Boom, 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 boom. Ding, 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 ding. Boom, 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 boom. All these, oh, man. And I want to tell you another thing. the crud that would come drifting down out of the sky from that switch freight yard, you wouldn't believe. Diesel. You know what kind of smoke diesel smoke is? You can slice it. In fact, you can make sandwich out of diesel smoke if you want to. You can just grab it out of the air and paint it on your house if you want to paint your house black. But the point is, I have no love for railroads. I was constantly around railroads. Noise. Guys in our neighborhood, there was at least five guys that lived in our neighborhood who were walking around with a wooden leg due to the fact that they worked in the roundhouse, and one day they got banged in between two train cars, and that was it. So I think the only people who are sentimental about railroads are the only people who never had a great deal to do with them. Just like people sentimentalize crime. You know, they think it's a groovy thing. Haven't seen much of it. We live with a lot of people that sentimentalize stuff like that, and they really don't know the real life of it. So, nevertheless, don't deluge me with letters about the railroads. I'm just fascinated by this railroad magazine, and apparently the railroads were such a big thing. Let me see when this one was published. I'll look at the date on it here. Oh, here it is. September 1937. Volume XX11, number 4, 15 cents. It's called Railroad Magazine. And it shows a guy standing on a freight car. The cover of it shows him, see him standing on a freight car, and he's apparently a switchman or something. And you see this long line of freight ahead of him, and they're going past a lake somewhere out in the west. You see mountains on all sides of him, and it looks like it's either dawn or sunrise. And he's a switchman or something. He's wearing this crummy old... it looks like a cowboy, actually. But there he is out in the west. He's a switchman. And so I looked at this thing. I said, hey, that's a great area of trivia. Did you know here on page 36 is an ad for Listerine shaving cream? I didn't know that Listerine made a shaving cream. Did you know that? Listerine shaving cream. And it says, get a painless shave, 10 cents, a tube of Listerine. They'll send you a sample tube, and it says, to get you to try Listerine shaving cream, we make this unusual bargain offer. Used razor blade container of genuine porcelain designed by Esquire magazine sculptor Sam Berman. Well, I bet that's worth a lot on the shaving, on the trivia world today. A used shaving razor blade container designed by a sculptor. It says, they'll send it to you for 10 cents. Also, a 20-day trial tube of Listerine shaving cream. So this does not even cover the cost of packing and mailing. And we'll send it to you. The giant tube, show you what kind of inflation is it, is the giant tube, which is good for 104 shaves, says the giant tube of Listerine shaving cream, is just 25 cents. For 25 cents today, you can't even buy a good stamp to mail a letter. Nevertheless, there it is. So I'm looking at this, see, and what is in the Railroad Magazine? There's all kinds of stories with totally incomprehensible terms. I think it's almost impossible to read one of these magazines today. You'd have to, because it's completely inbred. You have to know, well, all right, listen to this now. I'll read to you a poem that is in this issue. It's they have a joke section called The Sunny Side of the Track. Okay? All right, listen to this. Give me a little train music in the background there, if you will. Oh, yeah, that's a record of a train in West Virginia. It is. It's an authentic record of a train in West Virginia. I will read to you a poem from this pulp magazine called At Dawn. It says, time and trials have grayed my temples. Fiery fevers slowed the flow of the blood. The hogback quickened in the years of long ago. The hogback. What is a hogback? That's some kind of train or something. Ah, those years have fled forever. All those thrills forever gone when the coffee pot was boiling and the hogback passed at dawn. In the shadows of pagodas, when the eastern sun bursts red from an alien ocean's bosom where adventure's path has led, now I stand no more in wonder. Seek in foreign land no more for a glamour and a romance that in boyhood passed my door. Down the grade she came, a rumbler, with her 50 cars or more, bringing dreams of fame and fortune on some distant exotic shore. Now I've wandered far and wandering, watched the empty years roll on. Not a thrill to me, transporting like the hogback brought at dawn. Now, do you want to hear some of their jokes? Just keep it there in the background. Now, what is a hogback? I know what a hogback is. That's a railroad term. Listen to this one. Here's a joke from the sunny side of the track. A tough-looking boomer switchman opened the division superintendent's door marked private, without the formality of knocking. He faced a super just as tough-looking. I was just in to see the general yardmaster, said the boomer. And he ain't there, so the assistant yardlets tell me he needs snakes. By the way, they have a little footnote. You know what a snake is? A switchman. It says, the assistant tells me he needs snakes, but he ain't got the authority to hire. So can you fix me up to go to work? I don't know as if I'd care to hire you, replied the tough super. Well, why not? You need switchmen, that's what I am. Well, to be perfectly frank, the official explained, I don't like your looks. The boomer squared off and gave the super the once-over. Well, I'd like to see the blind son of a biscuit that hired you. Obviously, this was before unions. Now, that's called a joke. You want to hear another one? This is called detailed information. Now, I don't know what a boomer is, but they keep referring to boomers. It says, while a boomer was making a move with an engine and some Pullman cars, the super stepped up and looked around inquisitively. What do you got all of there? He inquired. Cars, was the brief reply. Cars. What's in them? Referring to the passengers. Seats, answered the boomer. The super, realizing he was making no headway, looked at a Pullman line number in a window and asked, what's that in a window? Glass, said the boomer. You win, growled the disgusted official and walked away. Is that funny? Not to me, but that's railroad humor, apparently. Here's one called His First Pullman Ride. A sailor making his first ride in a Pullman struck up an acquaintance in the smoking compartment. The two men went to bed at the same time. The sailor in the lower berth, his companion in the upper. The man in the upper, hearing a commotion below, leaned out between the curtains and called out to the sailor. Hey, what's the matter, Admiral? Okay down here? Not quite, came the reply. I got my duds off all right, but I'll be darned if I can get into this little hammock. Well, now, do you see what the humor is? In Pullman cars, they had a little hammock to put your clothes in. Being a sailor, he assumed that's what you slept in. Oh, do I have to explain it? Oh, man, that's a bad joke. You want to hear another railroad joke? This is called Shower Bath for Passengers. One day, a mixed train on the old O.R. and W. What the hell is the O.R. and W.? One day, a mixed train on the old O.R. and W. By the way, a mixed train means a train that has both passenger cars and freight cars in it. One day, a mixed train on the old O.R. and W. picked up a car of hogs at a weigh station with instructions to water them at the first tank. The train had a baggage car and two coaches on the rear and five boxcars and the stock car way up ahead. It was very warm, and most of the passengers on the coaches had their windows raised. By the way, this is in the sunny side of the street, I explained to you that this is not only a joke page, but it's also a little page of true stories of things that happened on the railroad. So you got this. These people are all sitting in the train. It's hot, and they had their windows open, and up ahead is a carload of hogs. For some reason, the engine crew mistook their signals. The brakeman pulled the spout back on the water tank and opened the valve to let the water run into the stock car as it was pulled slowly by the tank. The hogs were watered all right, but the train kept right on moving. The water valve stuck. The brakeman couldn't shut it off, On went the train, and as the coaches went by, they were drenched with a fantastic deluge of lukewarm green water through the open windows. The railroad company bought nearly the entire stock of a ladies' wearing apparel store to replace the soiled dresses of women passengers. That's from Williamstown, West Virginia. Well, I'm not here to belabor you with this trivia stuff, but it's fascinating how a whole thing will disappear completely, and it's gone. Look at the ad on the back, by the way. Do you recognize who that is? I'll hold it. You recognize who this guy is? Oh, that's right. On the back of it is a color, four-color ad on the back of the magazine, and it's and they're looking like he's about 12 or something, with a jazzy little sailor hat on, is Gary Cooper. And it says Gary Cooper's looking out, and there's a little balloon around his head, and it says, Gary Cooper says, quote, "It's common sense for me to prefer Luckies," what Gary says. And his statement on the back says, and we quote, "A little over a year ago, I changed to Luckies because I enjoyed their flavor. Ever since, my throat has been in fine shape. As a throat means so much in my business, it's common sense for me to prefer this light smoke. So I'm strong for Luckies." Gary Cooper. And underneath it says, star of the Paramount picture, Souls at Sea. That's why he's got a sailor's cap on. See, apparently that's taken from his movie. Souls at Sea. Did you ever hear of that picture? I said, that's completely... I never heard of it, but apparently... And their comment goes around, continues. It says, a light smoke. And underneath it says, it's toasted. Now, then underneath all of that, it says, Lucky Strike, the sponsors of Your Hit Parade. Now, that's a bit of trivia. And I have a vague memory of a guy doing... Give me just the slightest echo chamber. Here we go. Soul American. You remember that? Now, that's a bit of trivia. And that was always on the hit parade, yeah. No, he used to say... there was another guy that used to do that kind of stuff. And I remember all the time, it was always coming out of the radio, there would be this voice... Call for Philip Morris! And the voice would say, yes, Johnny the... And that was this little guy with the bellboy's cap and stuff on, yeah? Now, that's true trivia. And then there was also this voice that would come on and say, again, just a little echo chamber, so round, so firm, so fully packed. What cigarette was that? That's right. That was lucky, too. So round, so firm, so fully packed. Now, the whole idea, all this stuff is that's real trivia, man. I wonder if right now, tonight, somewhere, in some Valhalla of disappeared trivia, the Marlboro Man is riding in the rain wearing his poncho. With his tattoo. Remember the tattoo he always wore? What was the tattoo of? Come on, that's right. How many months? Not long. Those commercials have been off television. And the music would come on, da 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 da. And somewhere in Marlboro country tonight, the Marlboro Man sits and he's in the rain and he's heating up his coffee over what looks like a open fire, and these two cowboys are squatting down in the rain with their ponchos. That's right. Aren't where men are men. Marlboro country. You know, another great country that I kind of miss. How many of you miss Thunderbird country? You remember Thunderbird Country? Oh, yeah. That's another great country. What is it that went snap, crackle, pop? Snap, crackle, pop. That is correct. Wheaties. Raise the flag for Hudson High Boys, known throughout the land. Ever challenge meeting champions. Right? Well, now, what was toasted? What is it that had not a cough and a carload? What contained apple honey? In fact, there were even some records about that one. Woody Herman made a disc called Apple Honey that was a takeoff on that. Well, you know, you guys think you know something. You know, I just, no way.